Dr. Jonathan Bath, he has joined us. He is a board-certified vascular surgeon. He's joined us in the MRMC Doctor's Office program. Lots of interesting things we want to talk about today. And, Doctor, first of all, how about giving us a little bit of your background? How did you get involved in the medical field to start with?
Sure. Well, I grew up in the United Kingdom, and about 12, 15 years ago, had the opportunity to come over and work at Johns Hopkins for sort of a training program. I really decided I liked it in the United States, and actually at that point in time applied and came over here to do all my training. So it's been sort of a an interesting ride, but I've been in the States for about 12 years now, and I've been in the Midwest for about 6 of those years, so I'm pretty familiar with the region.
Is there anything in particular that got you interested in medicine to start with?
You know, honestly, no one in my family has a medical background per se. I just really, you know, thought it would be the direction I would go from a young age. About 16 years old, I think I made that decision, and I've just sort of never really looked back, really. It's been interesting at every stage.
How about landing in the Midwest? Are you pretty happy that happened?
I am, actually. So my wife is from South Bend, Indiana, if you're sort of familiar at all with the Midwest, and we met in Johns Hopkins, and she sort of moved all over the country with me. So we always wanted to be back in the Midwest, and, you know, I like the people, and obviously married one of them, so it's a good fit for me.
Okay, tell us about the specialty, too. When did that interest start for you?
So I did my training at Pittsburgh, so University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and that was many years ago, and we sort of did a fellowship there, and I really liked the sort of patients and the more the operations, I think, you know, sort of taking care of folks in a very a varied way. So it's been, you know, nothing but fun and fulfilling for me. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of good work with folks who have some pretty significant problems. So that's really what drew me to the specialty.
I was about to say, you must have undergone a lot of specialized training to get to this point, haven't you?
Yes, you could say that. Yep. It's a pretty long training program indeed.
Has the field changed, vascular surgery? Has that changed at all, even since you've been involved with it?
It has. I mean, over the past 10 years, sort of our specialty or my sort of area of interest specifically is really in aortic problems. So, you know, the big artery that runs up and down your body and also in sort of leg problems as well, the very small arteries that run up and down the legs. And that, you know, that's changed rapidly in the past 10, 15 years, really. We used to make these big incisions, keep the patients in the hospital for many sort of weeks. And nowadays, we can usually do them as sort of an overnight stay, occasionally through little punctures in the groin. So, I mean, it's really revolutionized things in sort of no way that other specialties has, really.
All right. When we talk about aortic disease, what are we actually talking about?
So, really, folks who have, folks might have heard of the term aneurysms. That's sort of where there's a ballooning out of the artery or swelling of the wall. And it's one of those things that when we sort of discover them too late, it can be, you know, usually pretty catastrophic. So we try and get in there early and have a screening program to find people that have been smoking, who are sort of older, who are male, especially in gender. And we try and screen for these aneurysms so we can repair them ahead of time. So essentially what we're talking about really is trying to prevent those aneurysms from bursting or rupturing by treating them ahead of time in a more elective fashion.
All right. You bring up a good point. Is one group or are there some signs that someone may be having an aortic problem?
Well, most of the folks that we come across usually are without any symptoms, and that's the majority of the folks we find in our clinic. And we encourage all you know, men over the age of 65 who have smoked significantly during their lifetime to talk to their primary care physicians and other doctors about having a free screening program. So there's a free ultrasound where they just run the ultrasound machine over your abdomen, and they can find these aneurysms, and that's all paid for through Medicare. So it's a sort of a great tool to try and reduce, you know, the emergencies that we often see in the middle of the night or transferred in from other hospitals.
Yeah, how important is it to do the preventative things ahead of time to prevent, like you said, something catastrophic like this from happening?
I mean, you know, this is really the main focus of what we do, is trying to repair these things before trouble happens. I mean, when these things happen, although we have a great sort of success rate at saving folks and have a good program here at MU and also at Moberly, it's very challenging to do that. And so really it's much better to do this in a controlled fashion ahead of time. I'd say it's one of the most important things people can do, you know, if you're male, 65 years old and smoked a lot. And women too. I mean, this is not just a male problem, but really that these are the criteria that we're sort of looking for You know, we want to be making sure we take care of these folks before any catastrophes occur.
Is anything like this hereditary too?
Yes, about 10% of aneurysmal problems, you know, run in the family. You might have had someone in the family who sort of passed away unexpectedly, or had a big aneurysm at a young age. And so, you know, if there's a family history of that, those are certainly folks who want to get down to the screening office too, either up at Moberly or a local hospital or down at Mizzou. I mean, you know, these are the places where we want to see you.
How about peripheral artery disease? What exactly would that be, doctor?
Well, generally, it's folks who find that, you know, the typical patient is somebody who comes into my office and says, you know, I walk around one of the stores, or I walk, you know, a block to go and pick up my mail, and I get cramping in my legs, you know, and it happens every time I do that. And again, smoking is sort of the number one cause, but folks with diabetes, high blood pressure also have that. And so I see a lot of folks like that, especially around the Moberly region, and we'll sort of bring them in, do an outpatient procedure, get them home in a couple of hours, and if we can, put a stent or something like that in. And that's really been helping to reduce these blockages in people's legs.
Well, doctor, I'm not a smoker, but that's something I've never heard before. Smoking can cause leg problems too. That's interesting. How does that work?
Absolutely. It's, you know, again, it's sort of a bit of an issue in terms of awareness that, you know, smoking does cause these issues all over. So the smoke and the sort of toxin within it really will cause some blocking up of the arteries, and as well as other problems, as I mentioned before, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cholesterol issues. And we sort of see folks who have blockages of their artery between their groin and their knee, their sort of thigh artery. And that's the majority of what we do, really, is try and unblock those arteries in a number of different ways, mainly, you know, in the cath lab, sort of minimally invasively, but oftentimes we need surgery for that too.
Yeah, how are some of the ways you can deal with a blocked artery?
Well, there's, you know, been a great technological expansion and revolution, really, over the years. And before, we used to just have to make long cuts down the leg and take a piece of vein or a piece of plastic tubing and sew that into the arteries. But nowadays, I'd say probably 70 to 80% of folks can be repaired through sort of a minimal puncture in one of the groins, and we'll channel through this blockage or sort of drill through it, if you will. And there's either devices to scrape it out, or we use balloons coated with medicine to try and prevent the blockages from coming back, or even put stents in to sort of push the blockages to the side, if you will. So it's been really interesting, the movement in this field especially.
Once someone has a procedure like that, do they generally have to have it again at some point?
So really, yes, that's the Achilles heel sometimes of these procedures, is we have to perform surveillance, and I usually see folks back on a 6-monthly basis, and we get some tests and check on them, and that's what we've been doing up at Moberly, seeing folks back. And if we see that something is re-narrowed, we can oftentimes go back in there and open things up again. But, you know, again, to stress the importance of stopping smoking, that's what causes these things to come back, actually, in some ways.
All right, Dr. Jonathan Bath is our guest, and let's talk a little bit about something that I think everyone is interested in, and that's high blood pressure, some of the causes, doctor, and what do folks need to be aware of?
Absolutely. Well, so we see a lot of our patients have, you know, high blood pressure, and we sort of manage them in concert with the cardiologists and with the primary care physicians. You know, there are a lot of folks out there that just have high blood pressure. We call it essential hypertension or essential high blood pressure. And that's really just hereditary, and it's something to do with sort of the makeup of that person. But a lot of the causes are a little bit related to diet, and certainly related to aging. They can be related to kidney issues. I mean, there are lots of causes of high blood pressure, but certainly working with your primary care physicians to keep that under control is the most important thing for your long-term health.
Well, I'm 52, and I can remember growing up back in the early 70s, we were always told that salt was a big factor. Is that still kind of the case?
I think it contributes somewhat. I mean, I think the, you know, obviously a high salt intake is probably not a good long-term strategy. I'd say it's probably the minority of causes, but certainly adhering to a sort of healthy and balanced diet is probably more important. Again, reducing smoking, controlling diabetes, these things go hand in hand, really, along with high blood pressure. And, you know, that's why it's important to go for regular checkups with your doctors and folks.
Doctor, are there some signs that someone may be having high blood pressure, something the average person can be aware of and say, hey, I need to go get looked at?
Well, when things do get really sort of high, and we call that malignant sort of hypertension or refractory hypertension, you know, folks can have some headaches and some, you know, occasionally chest pains and such. But honestly, the majority of times it's relatively asymptomatic, so without any symptoms. Again, you might find this if you have a blood pressure or physical or something like that. And we usually sort of just discover this at routine doctor's visits. So once again, it's not really something that will come with a lot of symptoms, but really something just to be aware of if you've ever had any high blood pressure issues upon screening and such. So,
is there a specific range that really does cause you some concern when you talk about blood pressure reading, something you're really worried about?
Well, I mean, there are absolute numbers, and we don't sort of adhere to them, but if the trend were to be, let's say, your top number were to be consistently above 160 or 180, that would be something that we'd really want you to address, and really there's good evidence that keeping that low is going to, you know, lead to a longer, more healthy life. But there are different categories, really, of high blood pressure targets, depending on other comorbidities, other medical issues. So, for example, if you have diabetes, we're going to want to push that down lower, sort of around the 130s or 135s. And so, again, it needs to be tailored carefully with your doctors to try and figure out what's the best goal for you.
Does high blood pressure run in the family too?
It can do, certainly. Again, there are sort of these familial hypertension or high blood pressure traits that people have. Again, it's not the majority of folks. The majority of folks just have sort of regular hypertension without any particular identifiable cause. And that's probably the majority of what we see.
Can a significant alcohol intake also kick up the blood pressure?
You know, it can. You know, the evidence for sort of significant alcohol intake and high blood pressure is sort of a little less well-defined. Obviously, you're taking on a lot of fluid, and the other health issues that come along with long-term alcoholic use can lead to high blood pressure. But, you know, that's probably a lesser importance than, again, things such as smoking, things such as diet and cholesterol levels. And, you know, those are really more defined risk factors, I'd say.
Doctor, let's do our good public relations thing here. Along with helping to reduce the high blood pressure, how important is it for someone to get out and get some exercise?
Well, clearly that's exactly what we sort of preach in our clinics. You know, folks who have blockage of the legs, folks who are in the clinics with high blood pressure, diabetes and such, you know, one cannot stress how important it is there to get out. And even going walking around the mall, you know, we see a lot of folks who in the inclement weather and the colder weather will go walking around the mall, and that's sort of a great way to get out and get your exercise. It might lighten your wallet a little bit as well, though.
We've always heard, at least when I was growing up, before you start any kind of exercise regime, you need to get looked at by your doctor. Is that still a pretty good idea?
I mean, I think generally if you're thinking about really embarking upon this, you just probably want to have a checkout and, you know, make sure that there's nothing sort of grossly amiss. Whilst I am in favor of folks, you know, seeing their doctors, you know, there's a lot of screening things out there that you sort of see pop up in malls and such. And I'd say just be a little careful about where you go to seek your care. You know, you really want to sort of go to an institution or a hospital that you know and trust. And so I would sort of say if you're thinking about doing that, your primary care physician rather than a sort of a free screening, the mall might be a more, you know, a more rigorous way of checking things out. But absolutely, you should at least have an annual physical and such, especially as one gets a little older and things can be found, you know, without symptoms.
When it comes to high blood pressure, is it the case once you've got it, you've always got it, or I don't want to use the word cured, but can it go away at some point?
Well, I think that's a good question. You know, I think generally we'd use the word sort of treated rather than cured. And really that might mean with, you know, losing some weight, getting out there and getting more exercise, perhaps making some changes in the diet, the salt intake, et cetera, you know, cutting down on smoking, and really all these things can really contribute to you having a lower blood pressure and sort of theoretically controlling it. And, of course, there's medication as well, which can control things. So to say it sort of goes away, I mean, it sort of comes and goes, I think, with the state of the health of the individual. So there's certainly things you could do to reduce your high blood pressure and without even taking medication necessarily.
Well, you just, something interesting just popped into my mind. You're talking about smoking causing so many problems too, but if someone is a non-smoker, but say they're married to someone who is a smoker, can that secondhand smoke also cause some of these problems?
Yes, absolutely. You know, sadly, for the longest time, we didn't really realize the impact of secondhand smoking, and we've seen folks with lung cancers, folks with different kinds of smoking-related ailments and illnesses from secondhand smoking. So, again, when it used to be more prevalent and everybody would smoke and folks in the car and folks at home, et cetera, would be exposed to this, I think the awareness is getting out there slowly that secondhand smoke is almost as bad as sort of active smoking itself. So yes, I mean, clearly also a significant problem.
So what can you do if you do live with a smoker like that? Is there any way to help reduce the possibility of you developing some of these issues?
Well, I think really, you know, you've got to sort of tackle this at the source a little bit and talk to the person who's smoking about whether or not they're ready to sort of engage in smoking cessation. You know, there's some stages associated with being ready to quit smoking, and, you know, primary care physicians have talk to people about smoking cessation programs. You know, quitting cold turkey is sort of probably the least acceptable or the least easy sort of thing to do. And so typically there are group therapies, behavioral therapies, medication as well, such as Chantix, people might have heard of, for helping quitting smoking. But this really needs to be marshaled, I think, by your primary care physician. It's something very difficult to do on your own.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's called AAA. What exactly is that, doctor?
So really, that AAA is sort of the handy acronym we give for what we call abdominal aortic aneurysms. And again, that just encompasses what we spoke about a little earlier in the interview, the aneurysms or the ballooning out of the blood vessels. So AAA is really what we're talking about when we're talking about aneurysms of the body, and something that we would push the issue for screening rather than waiting until there's a significant problem in order to address.
Do we see a lot of this, a lot of people having this issue?
This is actually very common in the Midwest. So we have a high prevalence of folks with aneurysms here, and we have some, you know, very rigorous vascular surgery training programs to address those issues. It's specifically sort of seen in folks in the Midwest because of the population. It tends to be Caucasian. Men of a certain age who are smokers, and you know, we sadly have a high prevalence of that in this region. And so once again, you know, screening is of vital importance for us to sort of reduce the burden of AAA disease.
Now, why would it seem to be so much more of a problem in the Midwest?
Well, it's a little bit to do with the sort of the population and the mix of folks that one finds in the Midwest. It tends to be, again, a problem, as I say, of male smokers of a certain race, usually of a white race. And so this is why I think in this region where we encounter folks that that meet some of these criteria, we do have a higher prevalence in some other areas. Certainly some other races are not as prone to aneurysmal disease, although that really is changing.
All right. How about aortic disease and ways to treat it? I understand you have some unique ways you like to approach this.
Well, you know, absolutely. As I mentioned, the technology has really changed, I'd say, the landscape of how we manage these. Even more complex aneurysms involving the kidney arteries, involving the arteries to the intestines and such, that historically would be needed to be treated with sort of an open operation and a big surgery that might keep you in the hospital for a couple of weeks. Nowadays, we can really tailor that approach, and we have more complex grafts and unique grafts that we're not using necessarily in other places around the country that can treat these problems. And so, really, I think that's one of the main advantages of working in this field, is that the technological innovations have allowed us to be more complex with how we can treat things in a more minimally invasive way.
You said something kind of interesting, because when we talk about aortic problems, I bet 99% of the people, doctor, think about the heart, but there's more areas of the body to consider than that, isn't there?
Absolutely. That's one of the first questions I get asked sometimes is when I mention I'm a vascular surgeon, is, you know, so you just deal with veins then? But typically, you know, vascular disease, we really operate all over the body, and we don't operate in the brain, and you know, and we don't really operate on the heart. But everything else, there are blood vessels everywhere else that we operate on. And aneurysms really affect anywhere from really sort of up in the chest all the way down through the lower extremities. And so this is something really that we have become sort of very specialized at treating and typically are sort of the go-to specialist for treatment of aneurysms.
And one thing that people need to be aware of, too, some of these problems can potentially lead to amputation, can't they? That's why they need to get looked at early.
Absolutely. And again, we, you know, both at Mizzou and also at Mobley see a lot of folks who are on that pathway. They've already gone to the point where they have pain when they're just sort of resting. They might have wounds in the feet, and that's obviously peripheral arterial disease and aneurysms that can certainly cause this too, of the extremities. So yes, I mean, we really are pushing the issue with having people come in and see folks if they have wounds, coming to see us earlier so we can do something before we have to talk about amputation.
So where do we see vascular surgery going in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years or so?
Well, I think, you know, we think about that all the time, and, you know, I suppose one day we may be having medications and treatments that can really dissolve the problems caused by smoking and other diabetes and high blood pressure. But for the time being, I think it's really with the technological advances. I suspect in the future we may be to the point where we're doing things fairly minimally invasively, not really having to make many incisions, and treating, I would say, almost everybody with some form of stent or minimally invasive therapy. That said, we're certainly not there yet at the moment, and we certainly believe that, you know, you should have the right treatment for you. Not everybody is going to be best served with a stent. And as you've mentioned before, quite adroitly, these patients sometimes have to come back over and over again for repeat intervention. So we need to balance, you know, the minimally invasive nature of the procedure with a long-term durable result. And that's where you really need to see somebody that can offer you both, you know, a vascular surgeon who's trained in these diseases.
I think you bring up another good point there. When you're talking about treating this, there's not one size fits all. Every case is unique, isn't it?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more with that. And as I say, we spend a lot of time sitting down and talking to patients, figuring out if they're going to be better served with an open operation, if they're healthier, or if they, you know, a little more frail. We might consider trying to do something more minimally invasive, understanding that it might not last, 5-10 years. We might get 2 or 3 years out of it instead. So you really have to sit down and talk to the patients about their desires and then really talk to them about what might be the best strategy specifically for them.
Doctor, how about when you're talking about treatment? Obviously, when someone comes to see you, there could very well be a significant problem. How important is it to incorporate the entire family into a treatment plan and let them know what's going on?
I mean, I think that's one of the most important things. So I think when I see folks and they sort of come on their own, I usually follow up with a phone call to the wife, the spouse, the daughter or son. I think really having the whole family understanding what's going on and having that support when that patient goes home is of paramount importance in having them get better. In fact, that's some pretty good evidence, really, that having a good family setup leads to better outcomes, longer lifespan, et cetera, than folks who you know, have to go through this alone. And obviously, there are some patients that don't have that support network, and we really try and plug them into the sort of social work network to make sure that they are looked after when they go home and, you know, brought back for regular appointments and such.
And how about your staff in both Moberly and Columbia? I imagine they work well with the patients too, don't they?
They do. So we actually have an excellent team. So we have clinic staff up at Moberly Regional, really, and they're very involved in the community. In fact, you know, I think a lot of them actually know some of the folks in the community, and we see sort of repeat faces come back here and there. The same thing in Columbia. I mean, we have a staff that have been, there's not a lot of turnover, sort of people have been here for a long time. They really enjoy serving the needs of the community. And so it's just been really enjoyable seeing those people sort of enjoy their work.
All right. Doctor, is this rewarding for you? Have you enjoyed this specialty and enjoyed working in this area?
Oh, I enjoy it immensely. I mean, it's often hard work, and I would say that I would try and get home to my family earlier if I could. But there was a real need, I think, especially in this area around Columbia and sort of mid-Missouri. And I came here specifically approximately a year ago from the University of Cincinnati to do this kind of work here. And it's been nothing but sort of immensely rewarding for me. So,
all right. As we wrap up, if you could put in a final word for someone and encourage them to get looked at, what would you like to tell them?
Well, I'd say, you know, if you're listening to this sort of radio interview or thinking about your health, then, you know, these are things to be thinking about, getting screened for aneurysms, looking at wounds on the feet. Don't let it go until it's too late, till we have problems and issues going on. Sort of get in there and see somebody and just talk to them and hopefully get referred to the right place, which is a vascular specialist could really help you out.
All right, Dr. Jonathan Bath, he's a board-certified vascular surgeon. He's joined us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office program.